Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at Sauce Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Benjamin running SlideGPT, an AI-powered presentation generator. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anna, for having me.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, it's fairly easy to figure out what SlideGPT might be doing. That's right there in the name. But maybe, you know, maybe I'm missing something, and you can tell me a little bit more about your background and how you got to do what you're doing, but also what the product is all about too.
Yeah, sure. So a little bit about my background. I am more like from the side coming to IT. I started with mechanical engineering and got a little bit blinded by the beauty of German car manufacturing. So I started off there. And after some years, I found out, okay, this is not where I want to be. It's changing in a way that I don't want to be at. So I came into the marketing area in 2013, 14, something like it. I learned that the tech part of marketing is much more fun than the marketing itself to me. And from then, I spent a few years in LA for some time with a startup. I was the CTO of a very small startup, and then came back to Germany, where I am also right now, focused on very much on IT. And after some time, I met really good people here in Germany, and we started with SlideGPT. And since you asked what SlideGPT is about, it's already in the name. We create PowerPoint presentations with AI, and we are trying to take away the very tedious part of working on PowerPoints, and just want to focus on what the person or presenter actually want to do. He or she wants to deliver a certain message, show some reports, want to explore some strategies about the company and whatnot. And this is what we want to do. Want to help the presenter just focus on what he or she wants to do, and not just the tedious part is setting up the PowerPoint presentation.
Cool. Hate those, but
yeah, me too.
But that said, you know, I have to ask you, because it's a recurring topic here, you know, and a lot of founders are curious and a little bit scared, I think, maybe, of AI and the fact that maybe, possibly, a lot of the tools that are very niche and are solving this one problem can be wiped out completely, because it's a lot easier now for bigger companies to build something like that tool, or, you know, it's easy for the end user to maybe just go to ChatGPT. I mean, why SlideGPT? What is your kind of general opinion on, you know, the whole wiping out of tiny SaaS?
Absolutely. I mean, I am unable to take away the fear of like building a feature and then, or thinking of building a product and just being a feature and then being wiped out. To be honest, I think this happens not just for small startup. This also happens for bigger companies. You are seeing this, as I mentioned, in the German car manufacturing business. There's like a lot of, let's say, automotive companies that are just taken off the market because they are not relevant anymore, especially when you have a combustion engine. Also, think about Nokia that just disappeared. So this happens for small and big companies. When you look at, for example, PowerPoint presentations, in our case, just to give you an example, you have, I'm not sure if this is worldwide used, but there's a company called ThinkCell, and they're an add-on for PowerPoint where you can create, let's say, more beautiful PowerPoint presentation. It's been around for 25 years. It's always been basically just a feature. But it's a very relevant company when it comes to PowerPoint add-ons or add-ins. So I wouldn't say we are for sure not unable to be taken off the market, but we have two legs. We have the B2C leg, we have the B2B leg. And when I just think about where SlideGPT can go, There's like a million use cases where we wanna, where we can be like be in the market. So if like one of these legs or one of the features that we offer is, let's say, getting less relevant, we have still a lot of room to grow in other areas. So I'm quite confident that we will be around for at least a few more years. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned Nokia, because I was just thinking about buying the first phone for my 7-year-old son. And I thought, okay, I need something that he can throw and like, it won't break. Yeah. And I don't want any like additional stuff. I don't want to like parent control him. What is it? And I was like, Nokia, it's Nokia. Yeah. Who sells Nokia these days? Maybe it's... Maybe it's making a comeback, you know, for millennial parents.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm even not sure, like, if can you buy still Nokia? I'm not sure.
I think they even have a smartphone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I'm not aware. But when you find out, I also have two children almost that age. So let me know if you are successful in finding a proper phone.
Right. We should reach out to their marketing department. Okay. That's your new market. Totally, yeah. Parents keeping their little ones off the screen. But that said, okay, I mean, that's a totally relevant opinion. And I think, to be honest, just kind of judging by all the conversations that I had here on the podcast, I've heard founders say, yes, okay, we are losing some customers that have been getting like this much value from the product, right? And obviously, yes, ChatGPT can solve that. But if you're going a little bit deeper and you're a bit more of a power user, then it's still very relevant. So do you see anything like that happening to you, especially maybe probably with B2C?
You're asking more about B2C, is that right?
In my personal, I don't know, kind of prediction, that could happen a bit more for a B2C customer, because I would be like, okay, well, why am I paying for this tool? There's, you know, ChatGPT where I do all the rest of the stuff, right? So basically it's not very relevant, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong.
I agree, while I was not looking at this from your angle, but I would totally agree. For us, it is our strategy moves from B2C, which was our, let's say, starting point of the company, and going much more into B2B because we see the power users, or like very heavy, very very relevant use cases more in the B2B area. For example, when you look at B2C, our main users are probably students, teachers, something like it, who just want to have a PowerPoint presentation, want to get it fast, like within a few minutes. They think, okay, tomorrow I have a presentation to do. I want to play whatever, Rocket League, and I have like 5 minutes for this task. So they just come to SlidesGPT or whatever and put a PowerPoint together. They pay our subscription fee for $10, for example, and they're good to go. And they can focus on what they like. When it comes to like generating a proper PowerPoint presentation with very nice graphs, good images, super aligned, connected to your own data, we're talking about B2B, and those are the heavy users with who need premium features. And this is where we see our future, because we think, yeah, for sure, OpenAI and ChatGPT is going that direction. They all also want to be a workplace solution, but there's so much room for companies like us to go into that area, because we have so many companies in the world that have specific use cases, and they want companies to fit to their needs. And I do not think that OpenAI will be able to provide the features to everyone. There's a lot of room to grow for us in the B2B sector. Yeah.
Interesting. And since you started with B2C, with moving more into B2B and bigger customers, how has, you know, the messaging and the marketing been changing?
Well, to be honest, you with SlidesGPT, you found a startup who is still very young, and we are very bad at marketing. We are focusing a lot on the product, and our marketing and messaging is more inbound. So we do present a little bit what we offer for the B2B customers on the website. while I would say the message we are sending out there is really, really not where we are. Since we have a lot of traffic on our website, we have a lot of inbound people coming to us saying, hey, I want to have SlicedGPT for our business. What can you do about it? And then we talk with the people and tell them what we can do. But the messaging, our marketing messaging, is, to be frank, not the best. And we are surprised that we get so many people reaching out to us. Yeah,
that's very interesting. I was wondering, you know, because well, there is GPT in the name, right? And I was like, okay, there are two ways this could go. Somebody could think, all right, this is a part of ChatGPT, and it's cool, and like we love that there is this arm that can just do the presentations, and that kind of builds trust, probably. Or now that you're growing, it might be a bit of a distraction, maybe, from the brand that you're trying to build. So, do you think maybe a part of those inbound customers are coming because of the name, or there is something else?
Yeah, so you're asking a good question here. So the name SlicedGPT is for sure based on our history, which is, okay, we are focusing on something that is built on top of ChatGPT, and people would instantly understand what they will get with our product. So ChatGPT means you can chat, you get answers. It's a very nice tool to have conversations, even more like solving tasks for you. And SlicedGPT would just like create slides. It is a little bit, it is actually helping quite a lot in terms of SEO. So we've been very well positioned in Google search just because of our name and because of what we offer. And we are offering our service instantly. So we get a lot of great user signals on SEO. But when it comes to brand name, what we are doing, it will be in the future a little bit more difficult. But at least in Germany, it's like that. When you try to have a brand name and you call it SlicedGPT, you have no option of like protecting your name because it's so general. And for that reason, we might run into like something like we might be renaming ourselves or not being able to protect the brand name in Germany at all. But then we would just rely on people know us, they know our domain. On the other hand, I would say if you just think of a tool like Trello, you have no idea what Trello is doing, or Asana, a task management tool. I mean, the name doesn't stand for anything. So people would also just see, okay, SlicedGPT is a company. I've been using it for a while. So let's see where this takes us. It's not a headache for us right now. It might become an issue in the future, but not right now. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. It also made me remember one of the other brands and the founder that I also interviewed here of a tool called AI PRM, if I'm not mistaken. And at first, like when it just appeared, because it's an extension per se for ChatGPT, and it was kind of like right there in ChatGPT with you. So for the longest time before I met the founder, I thought, oh, okay, there is this little plugin that ChatGPT made. And he was like, no. But that helped so much with their growth. And they went viral super fast. I don't know if that's still the case because I'm not using it anymore, but it was a very interesting kind of way to go viral.
We've been very well positioned on the GPT store, which is also people sometimes think we are some part of ChatGPT, which we are not, because we are a separate company. It's more like an app store, and we're an app inside the ChatGPT app store, and also available on web and Google and whatnot. But yeah, it helps us to that users try us out. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So GPT store, SEO, are there any other channels where you grow? And maybe there is something that was surprising for you.
For example, there's a lot more stores. We are also focusing on the Microsoft Store, while the Microsoft Store has a lot less traffic than ChatGPT, but it's growing and it's in the B2B area, so it's super relevant for us. We've tried out, obviously, a lot of channels, also performance marketing with Meta ads and also Google ads. While we see other companies like our competitors, Gamma, Canva is also some kind of competitor, Genspark, Manus AI, those are all creating PowerPoints, and I think they want to grow very fast. And so we see customer acquisition cost on especially performance marketing channels are quite high. And for that reason, we are trying to stay away a little bit from it, because simply it's better to focus on the organic channels and to make the product better than to spend all our money on marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to quickly Google how much funding Gamma has, because you said Gamma and I was like, wait, they're pretty huge in terms of you know, capital they want to deploy. So how does it feel competing with companies that are in that way, for example, are quite ahead?
Yeah, it's true. So it feels kind of we are like David in front of all those Goliaths. For some reason, we've been doing very well when you look at SEO in our relevant niches like PowerPoint generator or slides generator or PPT, whatever. We are in many cases in the top five, top three, sometimes, especially in the Indian realm, we are number one in SEO. For whatever reason, we are just trying to focus on our product. We are doing very, very little in SEO, just trying to make our product better. And it seems like all the user signals, the people going to our website using our tool, makes Google think we're like a really good fit for this keyword. And we are always surprised how well we are doing when we look at our competitors. They have so much more funding. They have, in some cases, and in quite a few cases, a lot more features. The website is like really good, very well designed, their apps. So, but we might be coming to this later on in the podcast, but the world of AI, especially as a company, opens a lot of doors. You can be very productive with a very small team. And this is why I think we will be able to still be able to compete in certain niches with the bigger startups.
Yeah, I mean, since you already mentioned it, let's talk about the team and how many you are and how you guys are, again, trying to compete with all those companies.
Yeah, we are just two core people and a handful of freelancers. And this is like a very small team. And we are only able to pull off what we did with the help of AI. So basically, not just our product is AI, our whole company is built on AI. So just to give you one example, I have a lot of different duties in the company. One is like customer support. We have around, I would say, 30 to 40,000 people on our website each day. And customer support costs me about 10 minutes per day. And this is...
it's all AI.
Because like everything, we try to automate everything. And you could say, okay, this might be really bad customer support, but actually the feedback that we get on customer support is super positive. So people are super happy how we do our customer support. And obviously there's a few people who really don't like us. So they say, okay, you offered subscription. I wanted more features, whatever. And they are like super unhappy, but this is not inherently related to the customer support. But in general, people are super happy with our customer support, even though this is just basically me spending 10 minutes per day on customer support.
How are you doing it? Like, what's behind? Is it just like a huge library of all kinds of questions, all kinds of answers? Is it the entire, I don't know, backlog of what you're building? How are you making it happen?
We're trying to solve the problems in a, like, thinking about the problem and then solving the problem. It is not, we do not have any AI answers. So we do not have a chatbot. So when people ask us a question, we answer it. I answer the question. I have a few templates, but I try to solve the problem, which is based on the question. So if a certain, like a certain, if I see a certain problem for our customers appearing over and over again, I try to solve the problem. And once the problem is solved, in many cases, those questions do not arise anymore. So I'm trying to, what I'm trying to focus on is to get less questions from people and not to automate the responses. So this is like how the approach in customer support is.
All right. So 10 minutes doesn't mean that, you know, everything's automated. It just means that if there are a lot of same questions, you go and solve it and there are nothing else to solve. So people are happy and there are not too many tickets to solve. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. That's a good problem to have. All right. What are the other roles? So you have customer support, obviously, development. How many people are working on the core product?
I would say two people working on the core product. And we have the core meaning like really the powerhouse, the engine of our software. And then we have 3-4 more people working on, let's say, the outside of the product, like the features that are what you see, the features that are making the website nicer, making the tool look nicer and more UX related things and a little bit of user flow. But when it comes to like the really core of the product, our crown jewels, I would say that's mainly one, maybe 1.5 or 2 people. Yeah.
Okay. And what exactly is the, you know, AI tool or tools that you're using to, again, to make this happen, to make sure that development is faster?
If you are on X, for example, you see a lot of people like pointing out the way it's going. So whenever something new comes out, we are always trying it. We are the first people to try new dev tools. I, for myself, work a lot with Cursor. You might know Cursor. It's a IDE, which is super powerful these days. We also integrate into our GitHub Claude, so you can... If you're a developer and you can follow what I just say, I'm not sure if everyone can follow, but you can just in GitHub raise an issue, say, for example, hey, I want a new feature about this and that. Then the AI, like Claude, basically thinks about the issue, creates a pull request. So saying, I want to change your code with this and that solution. And then obviously this is more like vibe coding, but you need a proper software engineer to like go through it and see if it's good or not, and you change the code. But this way you are able to really fast work on your software. This is more like, let's say, a little bit on the outside. If you go really into the core of the software, you need to be more hands-on a little bit. But this was just to give you an idea how we're able to, with a very small team, are able to develop a lot of relevant features very fast.
Yeah, sometimes I look at, I live in a city where there are a lot of digital nomads, and like, I don't know, 80% of them are developers. And sometimes just in a workspace or at a cafe, I just watch a developer work with Cursor. And it's just fascinating. It's like gigantic pieces that are being created right away. And it's so interesting. I myself am not technical, so I only tried Lovable. And a few developers were laughing at me. They were like, yeah, I mean, it's pretty, right? But what's inside, nobody knows. And if something breaks, you will pay me so much money to find out.
That's true. And you cannot build a company on vibe coding and how I just described how we can be very fast. You need really good. So my idea about the next, let's say, 12 months of software engineering, maybe 24 months of software engineering, is that you need super senior principal software architects who are able to orchestrate AI's coding. When you are a junior software developer, from my perspective, you will have a very hard time finding a job. Probably, not sure, but probably, because all the junior tasks can be done by AI, and you need really good software engineers to put the pieces together and make sure you do not build too much legacy code and old code. because if you do, you end up like with a gigantic mess, and you will not be able to get out of this mess with your software in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. So I wanted to ask you, you know, again, about the usage of the product and your customers and what you are learning from them. Because obviously, you know, I feel like it's definitely a great way to start where you have a vision and you have a realization of how the product could look like. And, you know, you're just building it before anyone else tries it. Because, yeah, I mean, it's good to show it to customers, but it's also very easy to get distracted. But once they're there, now you know what you wanted to build. Now they're trying it. Are there some use cases where you were like, okay, well, we haven't thought about that. Like, let's maybe add a feature or let's maybe change something here. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from your customers?
Well, a lot. I would say most of our development is driven by customer feedback. We have a few input channels for customer feedback. For example, on ChatGPT itself, people can rate us and they just say, okay, this is shit because of this and that. Then we have, for example, Churnkey installed right now, which is giving us quite a lot of feedback. Stripe has a cancellation feedback. Customer support is an input channel for feedback. And if you put all of this together, you have a strong indicator where your roadmap is going in terms of B2C. Like, this is what the customers want. This is why they cancel. If we launch that feature, they are not canceling. This only gives you incremental growth or incremental, let's say, development in your company. This is not like a vision, like I want to be there in 2 or 3 years. For this, you still need to understand the business you're in. You need to understand how the technology is changing. You need to understand the market, and you have to have a clear vision. And this is not based on customer feedback. When it comes to B2B also, it's very easy to get, they just tell you, they just come to you, your customers say, I want to have this. If I'm not getting that, I'm going to cancel the contract with you. And then you have to decide as a product manager or as a, let's say, manager at the company, do I want to do it? Like, how much do I have to put in to build this? And can I use it also for other companies? So I have some scaling opportunities here, or is this just something for the customer? And I need to say, okay, this is something you want to have. I have no capacity to do that. Nobody else wants it. Sorry, I'm not doing it. It's a different game, I think, B2B and B2C, but B2C, you need to have a lot of input, and it, like, the input you're getting gives you a roadmap for the next few weeks and months.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned also the reviews on GPT Store. I talked with a few founders that do that and that grow there. And basically, well, like any marketplace, right? You have to have good reviews to rank there, to be findable. And it's always a bit of a dilemma, like, what do you do with a bad review? And, you know, I heard founders say, hey, you know what, we contact them, we give them free subscription for a year, we make sure that, like, they are the happiest client after all. How do you make sure that you rank well?
Focusing on the product, to be honest. So we get I'm not reaching out to bad review customers. I could do it, but I have no time for it, unfortunately. But we are like very strongly having a look on how we are performing every day. We take a look, and if we see there's a drop in our, let's say, performance in reviews and whatever, we react immediately. And it what you don't see usually is that OpenAI is changing its models quite a lot. It's not just, okay, we have now 4.0, 4 mini, we have now 5, whatever. They are changing the models in between, even though people don't see it. And they are fixing things. So, for example, when GPT-5 came out, there was a lot of issues with it, and they made changes to the GPT.
That was a dark day on LinkedIn.
Yeah. I believe you. And we were like, right, like we saw GPT-5 was released. Our software was like working way less good. It was like horrible for some time. We're like right on it, trying to fix the product and make it better. So it works well with GPT-5. And then OpenAI fixed it themselves. But anyway, whenever we see how we are performing compared to our competitors, we are like working on the product. We're not always trying to make the customer like super happy, saying, okay, you had a bad review, here's your money, here's a coupon, whatever. We're trying to make the product better. I think we already touched this philosophy before when I spoke about the customer support. We are very much product focused and not too much about the symptoms. We are more into trying to fix the root cause.
Fascinating. Okay. So what you're saying is still behind the product, there is OpenAI API that you're using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Okay. So how do you work with, you know, we all know ChatGPT hallucinates, and I even found this little review where somebody was saying that, you know, everything was great. It was really fascinating to see that the slides that I wanted were generated, but there was a problem with an image. It didn't really match what I wanted. So how do you make sure there are no hallucinations or less of them? What is your process?
We cannot solve this issue. Obviously, we are not a medical advisor or a psychological advisor or, let's say, military advisor. So we stay away from the areas that are like super sensitive. I mean, AIs hallucinate. They give you wrong answers and they're super confident about it. You probably know better than I do because you might be using it even more than I do. But we are not able to solve hallucinations. We're getting bad feedback on our product sometimes, where people say this presentation like the content of this presentation, the text, the sentence was really bad, the image was not matching, something like it. We cannot solve this, but we are very confident that on the one hand, the users are already learning that AI is hallucinating. So they are not like expecting this much anymore, that the answer is 100% true. They learned it from ChatGPT, it's hallucinating, and they accept on a certain level hallucinations on our side. And once the models will get stronger, and they will get stronger, there will be less hallucination, there will be better fitting images, the graphs and presentations will be better. So we are like, just like on the, I'm not sure how to say this in English, but we're sailing right behind OpenAI, ChatGPT, Gemini and whatnot. And when they're getting better, we're getting better. And we're basically unable to solve the problems they are having.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's not a fun problem to have, but I think it's a really cool, interesting learning curve. And it's, I mean, it's also very interesting how, you know, how you learn using AI, because just a few months ago, I caught myself doing something on AI, on ChatGPT. I was trying to, so I think I was reworking some kind of an old post, and what I wrote to ChatGPT is make it relevant for SaaS founders. And then I looked at it and I was like, but how does it know what relevant is? Is there a piece of content on the internet that says, okay, this stuff is relevant for a SaaS founder? Like, where would it learn? Right? So I was like, okay, all right, here's where I'm making a mistake. So first I'm teaching you, and then you can give me a better answer. So I think you're absolutely right. You just have to wait on both sides to kind of get better at this.
Yeah, I totally agree. So we are learning how to use AI to communicate better with it, to, let's say, circumvent hallucination. If I, this is the same as delegating, if you're a manager of a company, you need to delegate your tasks to the people who are working for you. And if you're not communicating properly, you will get really bad results. Same goes with AI. And as you said, on the other side, AI will get stronger and stop and will hallucinate less often and be much more precise and correct on answers. So I'm trying to, obviously, communicate in a better way with AI to circumvent hallucination. And I think all the other users are learning it also on the internet right now. Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah. all right. Well, I also want to ask you, you know, obviously it's very early in your journey, but so far already, were there points where you thought, okay, this is our great win and this is our great failure?
Yeah. So about failure, I would say we make a lot of mistakes and a lot of things right. I wouldn't say we had like a huge fuck up so far. I mean, at the start of the company, we could have been much more aggressive, taken much more risk. We see it now because we see, okay, there was a huge opportunity. It was even bigger than we expected it to be. Why didn't we, let's say, invest more, dive deeper into it? It's the same like going to the casino playing roulette. If you like put all your money on red and then red like comes up, you say, why didn't I put more money on red, right? So it's very easy to to talk like this about it. But like a retrospective, if we push harder at the beginning, we would be a bigger company right now. So also in general, we're a German team and the German philosophy is a little bit more conservative. We are like always when things, we're not so like, let's say, outgoing, say we are the best at everything, and we can do this and that, and we are trying to grow really fast. We in general we can be more like outgoing, we can be try to be faster, to go with features and products to the market even faster than we're doing right now. We are a little bit too conservative, I would say. And also when it comes to HR, I think we could do a better job in HR, because every problem you have in the end is, if you ask, why did this happen? Why did this happen? Why did this happen? It ends up with a person. A person, for example, made something very right or made a mistake. And every question in the end is an HR question. So if you have the best people, you will become the best company. And we're not focusing enough on HR. That's my opinion. So this is what I would say about, let's say, mistakes or failures.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're like, the biggest wins we have are, yeah, with this very small team, we are now 7-digit ARR as a SaaS company, like very profitable usually. And we are also very profitable, especially since we have like almost zero marketing costs. So this is like a very good thing that's just a big win. So if we are like, we have a lot of like room to grow also financially. So we could, for example, go in this direction, go in that direction, invest the money that we have here and there, or just say, okay, we just want to be a profitable company. So that's something we can be proud of. We were absolutely lucky. Like also we found the right niche. It was basically just an idea at the beginning and it was an idea in the right space. And yeah, that's the biggest win, I would say, that we had. Yeah.
Awesome. That's kind of, you know, you're kind of describing a perfect profile of a company for a SaaS group, where, you know, everyone's focused on the product and it's already going really well. And I mean, we bought quite a few of German companies that were just like that. And then we're like, okay, and we can do marketing.
Yeah, it's true.
And then it's a win-win.
I can totally agree. And I mean, like, marketing for me is something that should be done more professionally on our side, because there's a lot of room to grow. And especially, for example, if you take venture capital, then you are expected to grow fast. And this means, like, okay, now it's time to really ramp up the marketing, because you want to grow, you want to protect your space. And that's something where we're obviously also always thinking about how to grow faster. And but as again, our DNA is still a little bit German, and we are like thinking, okay, let's try to do this sustainable also.
All right. So investment is off the table for now.
For now, we're not talking about it too much. It might be, I mean, like with every company, you have ups and downs. When you're like in a down phase, let's say you're thinking, okay, money is running out. Where do I get money from? And then you're thinking about, okay, maybe I need an investor to grow here and there. And then you're in a bad position because you have no leverage in negotiations. When you're in a, let's say, in prosperous times, like we are right now, you're not thinking about it because it's not a problem right now. But to be honest, it would make more sense to reach out, to have connections, to build relationships, and maybe talk in this area, because you have a lot of leverage in negotiations. So again, maybe this is a mistake I will tell you in 1 year about that we didn't reach out to investors in times where we didn't need it.
Well, hopefully not, but of course, let's do it in a year. Yeah. Well, the last question is always about a hack, right? And it can be anything, you know, hiring, maybe not hiring if it's not a strong suit, then, you know, AI, anything. It can be even personal, you know, something that helps you do this, but anything you think other founders would appreciate.
Yeah. I assume you have a lot of people who are very knowledgeable in AI, but again, said for to point this out, when we have a topic, an opportunity, a problem, we think AI first. Can AI solve this? Maybe not the easy way. Maybe you just need to think of it from a different angle. But AI first. This is our DNA. Our DNA is also HR second. But not as second, like it's really behind. It's the second thing you need to think about. It's like super important. And this is, I would say, the advice I would like to give. Focus, especially in AI times where AI is on a very smart student level or at the school level. It is not like a PhD level good. It is not professor level good. But try to solve the problems with AI and then with really smart people. And in terms of like hacks or say how to grow fast, I would advise to give very little barriers to use your product or to use our product compared to our competitors. Predators, that's really bad. Sorry. Compared to our competitors, we had much lower barriers to use our product. So they would be always behind a login wall or behind something like it. And being without a login wall, people could use us right away, which boosted our SEO. I'm quite convinced about it. And also made the people see what they get and then being able to pay it. So we have like a huge amount of users in our database just because they used it. And once they used it, see what they get, they would like create an account, log in and whatever. So this was a very, very good way to grow quite quickly. And the last thing I would say is focus on the product. I mean, we talked about it quite a bit already, but a good product is always the catalyst, in my opinion. It is much better to work on the root cause than to work on the symptoms. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm convinced that no amount of salespeople will save you if at the end of the day the product-led growth because of how good the product is not working. So
yeah, that I totally agree.
Makes great sense. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I mean, this is great. Like you said, you're very early in your journey. But, you know, I went to the website. I tried it. I was like, okay, that's very easy. Mm-hmm. So I would, you know, if I needed PPTs, God forbid, I would totally use it. Yeah. But I avoided like fire. But yeah.
Good thinking.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks so much for being here. It was great chatting with you.
Anna, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Same here. Take care.
Bye.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.